Welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Noyce, and this is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. On this episode, I'm joined by ACS Chief Executive James Lohman.
Hi.
And Head of Policy and Public Affairs, Ed Woodall.
Hi.
To talk about what is probably the biggest issue making all of the headlines at the moment, and that's the battle between Jeremy Hunt and Boris Johnson to become our next Prime Minister. And as of recording this, the Conservative Party's 160,000 members are now voting, with a candidate who achieves more than 50% of the vote being declared leader of the party. And thankfully, that's a bit more of a simple system that we're seeing in the States at the moment. And I know it feels like this has been going on forever, but we are almost there. Both candidates are currently taking part in hustings events with members all over the UK, where it's likely that more and more of each candidate's plans for the country in the coming years will be announced, and perhaps some additional ideas teased out through some of the questioning as well, many of which will have a direct impact on our sector. Now, Ed, you've been keeping a close eye on the ins and outs of the campaigns of both candidates. What's stood out for you so far?
Well, there's been so much content and each day seems to be being a swathe of new policy announcements. But actually, with most of these campaigns, I always think it's the political lapses and the gaffes that stand out a little bit more than some of the policy announcements. And Jeremy Hunt did that with fox hunting, I think. I don't know why he quite went there. And equally, Boris Johnson getting the national living wage wrong in one of his interviews seemed like a strange lapse, especially as he was announcing a policy in that area.
So yeah, so do you think I was just getting it wrong or just not knowing what it was?
I couldn't possibly tell, and I'm sure he wants us to be unsure about the answer to that as well. But yeah, so he was announcing a new policy around national living wage, which I'm sure we'll come on to talk about, which is essentially about increasing that. I think the other thing that's been interesting is seeing the different people aligning behind the different candidates as well, because ultimately those are the ones that form the new cabinet. Ian Duncan Smith was brought onto the Boris campaign to do more work and develop policy ideas around that. And then Jeremy Hunt surrounds himself with lots more Brexiteers to give him sort of more credentials around delivering on Brexit, which is important for him for the party. And generally interested in how they've positioned themselves as candidates. I thought, you know, Jeremy Hunt always talks about his entrepreneurial credentials, his ability to negotiate as a key pitch, because obviously he needs to deliver Brexit and show he can do that.
Yeah, we were listening on the radio earlier actually, and Jeremy Hunt saying that every hustings he's going to, and they're doing, what, a couple of dozen of them, every single one he's going to, he's doing the show of hands, how many of you are entrepreneurs, how many of you have started your own business, and really putting his credentials across as the entrepreneurial candidate.
Sure. And if you're playing this sort of candidate bingo, you'll hear him say, I'm an entrepreneur, I want to turbocharge the economy, I'm a great negotiator, all those things. And equally for Boris, he's really relied on his track record in London. And his track record is, look what I've delivered in London. Look, I won electorally in a really tough area for the Conservatives, and I can do that again. I think that's what he's gone back to, and that's his really safe ground in that space. So those things have sort of stood out amongst a number of other policy recommendations that are very relevant to our sector.
Sure. So let's get into some of the detail of what a Hunt or Johnson government might be up to in the coming months. And I suppose the first thing to compare on the candidates is, of course, Brexit. This is the big issue, the issue that I think is going to define the next 6 months at least. And we've heard a lot about the likelihood and willingness of each candidate to take us out of the EU without a deal. James, I'll start with you. What would no deal mean for our sector?
Yeah, huge uncertainty. And the fact is, I can't give a definitive answer to say, you know, exactly these things would happen. What we do know is that there would be new rules about who would be entitled to live and work in the UK. And that will have an impact on our sector. About between 1% and 2% of people working in our sector are non-UK EU nationals. But there are many more working in related sectors. And of course, if those industries start to lose more of their workforce, they will have to up their game in recruiting people. And that'll mean that they'll be looking to recruit from our colleagues and that pool of people. And we'll have to work harder to recruit and retain people. So that squeezing of the labour market, that we're already in a pretty tight labour market, that further squeezing of the labour market will have a real impact if that were to happen. And the other point really is supply. I mean, supply of products into convenience stores. You know, what really worries me is that we are, to some extent, the bottom of the food chain on this.
Sure.
You know, who's government going to be most concerned about? It's going to be schools, hospitals, prisons, and making sure there's food supply into those types of outlets. And then it's going to be the larger supermarkets, the bigger groups, the bigger caterers who are probably going to then be the next in line. And the risk is that particularly independents slip further down the priority listing, where we're talking about national decisions about where products should and shouldn't go. So I know wholesalers, importers are doing a huge amount of work. They did a huge amount of work before March 29th, the original deadline, to plan for this. And I know that work is in train again. And I think it's just, you know, it's really important that we're prepared as much as we can. Obviously, you can't prepare on the basis of what I've just said there, but we'll be continuing to develop that. And we're on various working groups with the Department for Business and DEFRA. So we'll keep relaying this out to the sector, but you have to start thinking about this now.
Yeah, and I guess in terms of no-deal preparations, we did some research on this. Not many retailers are doing any stockpiling, but there are some. So how much of an impact is this continual set of false starts on no-deal having on the sector?
Well, it hopefully it won't have the impact, because the right thing to do is prepare now and be ready and start thinking about how this is going to be in a store. It's difficult for retailers to stockpile because everything's obviously optimized for sales space and the regular delivery. So I think prepare now is still the key message around this. And you'll see from national government very, very shortly that all of the no-deal planning, because both candidates in this leadership election are very strong, that I will be upping the national game on no-deal planning. So you will see all of the things that were happening.
Of course, yeah, Hunt beginning announcing the war chest for no-deal planning, the 20 billion that has found from somewhere.
Yeah, but both of them are very committed to upping their game on no-deal planning straight away.
Yeah.
So you can see, you know, get crowned on the 23rd of July, 24th of July, there'll be an announcement on no-deal planning, and the wheels of government will start churning and focusing on that very much more.
So if you can make a prediction now, we've heard differing opinions on the timetable for leaving the EU. The date we have now is October 31st. If you can make a call now, do you think we're in, out on 1st November, and with or without a deal? James, I'll go to you first.
I think that no deal is the single most likely option, and I think we have to have that mindset, and it happens to be what I think as well. You know, I think there are a number of options. Some sort of fudge through to get a deal, or some sort of way of renegotiating the deal, if that can happen. Revocation of Article 50, a second referendum, a general election. You know, all those things are on the cards. There's five or six different options. The most likely single option of those, in my opinion, is a no deal. So we have to take this really, really seriously now.
Yeah, and the strength of the candidate's commitment to the no deal is, I suppose, the thing that we can really be clear about. And Boris Johnson's quote is do or die for no deal on the 31st of October. He's been very clear on that. Jeremy Hunt, slightly different position. He's going to make a decision at the end of September on the likelihood of getting a deal through, and then make a decision about how much further they go for no deal. But So that's where they stand.
So that's the latest on Brexit. And I guess, as we know, it can't all be about Brexit. And our next Prime Minister will have to set out a fully fleshed out domestic agenda pretty quickly once they come in. And one of the issues that retailers are really going to be interested in finding out about is what's going to happen with business rates and what government is going to do to support High Street. So, Ed, where do the candidates stand on this?
So they've both decided to have High Streets as one of their key pitches in their leadership campaign. Boris Johnson is saying around scrapping business rates on ATMs to give people more access to cash, increase spending on High Streets, and also look to do something a bit more longer term around planning reform, so you can make it easier to convert property so that the environment's more flexible. So very much supportive. Jeremy Hunt, on the other hand, is committed to a big, tax cut on business rates. So anyone with a rateable value under £51,000 would pay no rates whatsoever, which would, of course, for the convenience sector, most sites would be under £51,000 by a long, long way.
Yeah.
So that would be a really sort of beneficial outcome. Of course, that is all still capped with the state aid laws, so you can't do more than €300,000 on these things, but nonetheless, a positive move.
And James, you're on plenty of government groups, sector councils. Business rates is always a key issue there. How much room to manoeuvre does the government really have on business rates, given that we've heard time and time again that it is a zero-sum game?
Yeah, they're looking for a revenue-neutral solution. Now, what's interesting is current government policy has been to introduce reliefs and measures to try to address some of the areas that look, if you like, most unfair or sectors under the most pressure. And some of those things have been really good. I mean, let's be clear, some of the one-third off that was announced in the last budget for businesses under £51,000 rateable value, really important thing. But I think what we and our colleagues in the across different types of business organisations would say is that we do need to look at how the whole system is formulated. and try to arrive at a fairer and more modern business rate system.
The current one is the key, isn't it? Is that it was working maybe 20, 30 years ago when we didn't have such a huge online presence, but now there's probably need for change, isn't
there? On growth of online, but also conversion of retail and other business use into housing. And the dynamics are changing, and that's not really reflected currently in the business rate system. So, I think it's interesting that when they've talked about business rates, they've framed it in terms of reliefs and measures to provide, if you like, immediate relief and support for those businesses. We're not against that, but that's the debate we're having in the business community, and we've been having with government for a number of years, is about the need for really fundamental reform. It's interesting, neither Boris Johnson or Jeremy Hunt have gone there.
Well, I suppose it is quite difficult for them to go there at this point. It's not an easy one to communicate across in a campaign. It's not something that they're going to do in the first 100 days of either the Hunt or the Boris government, because they've got other things to do. They need new legislation to deliver it. So I think it's good to have these commitments on record and something to build on in future.
Yeah. And so moving on now to something else that's made the headlines over the last few days from the Boris camp. It's something of a promise of review on so-called sin taxes on things like sugar, with the reason given for this being to reduce the burden on people on low incomes. What are the potential consequences of a review on sin taxes?
Well, firstly, there should be a review. I mean, there should, we all should have evidence-based policy. These things move quite quickly in terms of, we've introduced, for example, the tax on sugary drinks, levy on sugary drinks. And so we should always be reviewing how are these working in terms of their public health objectives, in terms of consumer response, and is it meeting the objectives that it had? In terms of the outcomes of that, I think there will always be pressure for measures to address obesity, diabetes, and the range of issues that we are, which are growing as issues. And this whole debate about to what extent is that purely down to personal choice? And the things we're hearing from Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, people like that, much more sort of libertarian viewpoint, is saying it's down to, ultimately it's down to personal choice. They can make those sorts of decisions. Or to what extent do we see these sorts of, whether it's tax or other things, being used as levers to try to influence those challenges. And if anything worries me slightly, it's not that we're in any way sort of cheerleaders for those sorts of sin taxes, but that review should take into account and look at all sorts of mechanisms for influencing behaviour. So we're looking at, just completed the consultation response, and one of the first things the new Prime Minister and their new Health Secretary, or whoever that is, whether it's Matthew Hancock or someone else, will have to look at is, do they want to move ahead with some of these measures to try to tackle obesity, a new strategy, which could include, on the basis of the consultation, very severe restrictions in stores about where products can be placed, very severe restrictions on promotions and things that we can run. So I welcome any review to look at the evidence and be clear about the cause and effect of various proposals. That's great. I sort of worry a bit about the idea of reducing it down to being out sin taxes. Sure. There's a whole range of measures that are introduced, and we should be looking at the effectiveness or otherwise of all of those things.
Yeah, and when you talk about other potential interventions, things that could happen in store, of course there's going to be a cost to enforce those. Yeah. And I suppose the common sense argument is, why are you spending money on extra enforcement for things like getting a tape measure out and seeing how far away the confectionery is when you could spend it on policing?
Indeed.
And that's the final issue I want to cover, actually, is on policing and crime. The Boris camp has come out and said that they are planning to put 600, 700 million into training 20,000 new police officers. Ed, I'll start with you. How much of an impact do you think that will have on the problem of retail crime? And is it the only solution, or is it just part of a wider set of things that's needed?
Well, in our recent submission to the Home Office, we've talked about policing numbers and policing resources being an issue in terms of the in the ability to respond to some of these issues that our members face in their stores. So yeah, I think this is a welcome move. I think the challenge is with this is that it's going to take a long time to come through. It's a longer term issue as opposed to a short term measure, and it has to be part of a package of wider reforms to the justice system, because we actually see the cycle of offending going round and round, where the same individuals are coming back, they're being issued with a fixed penalty notice, but it's not really dealing with the root cause of the problem. So bringing all that together is the real solution to this, and policing is one big part of that. And I think as part of the spending review, when it eventually comes round, that policing is going to be very much at the heart of that, and that's the right thing.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right that just more officers doesn't necessarily mean better justice.
Yeah, I don't think we can make an impact on this problem without more officers, but we're going to need more than more officers to have the impacts we need.
Absolutely. And I should say there are a whole range of other issues that we could be covering in this. I'm sure we'll get through over the coming weeks, but these are a few of the big ones that I think have made an impact over the last few days. Finally, as I said earlier, it feels like this race has been going along for a long time now. We are almost there. In terms of timing and next steps, the process goes on until 22nd of July, when all the votes will be tallied and the new Prime Minister will then be declared. Until that time, though, it's pretty much open season with both candidates. I'm sure there'll be plenty of twists and turns and policy announcements and scandal and all sorts over the next few weeks. The three of us will be back next week to take stock of anything new. Until then, if you have any questions, concerns, worries about policy, worries about announcements, worries about anything else to do with your business, please get in touch with us. All of our contact details are on the website, acs.org.uk. Until then, we'll see you next time.